Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, Harold Felder, and today the topic is beauty. Now, I'm warning you, this is a deep topic, but don't turn your dial because this is also very good information. I had a professor tell me one time, when a topic is over your head, you just need to do pull-ups, that's what it is, pull-ups. So do some intellectual pull-ups, because it's gonna be a deep topic, but it's gonna be a very informative topic. To talk with me about this topic, I have Michael Spiker. Let me give you a little bit of his background. Michael Spiker has a bachelor's in biblical studies from Zion Biblical Institute, a master's of apologetics from Southern Evangelical Seminary. He's also spoke at the National Conference of Apologetics, National Apologetic Conference, on this very topic, beauty. As a matter of fact, I wasn't there at the conference. However, I got the tapes, and I was listening to the tapes, and I heard you talk about beauty, and I was like, that is awesome. I've never thought about that. I've never heard that before, so I'm glad to have you on, Spiker. Welcome.
Thank you.
Did I leave anything out?
Not that I can think of. I mean, just that I also spent about 3 years studying this while working on my master's thesis.
Yeah, you wrote a master's thesis on this, and it's actually in the library at Southern Evangelical Seminary. Talking to you earlier, you were saying that you have how many books on this topic?
About 150, maybe.
So this is something you're really interested in. As a matter of fact, how did you get interested in this topic?
Well, I'm a painter and a musician, and I was taking one of my second semester at the seminary, I was taking a class with Dr. Tom Howe, and he just made this side comment about beauty, and the class maybe lasted all of 10 seconds that he made this comment, and it made me think, because he said, beauty cannot possibly be in the eye of the beholder. So I started thinking about it, and I went up to him after class and asked him some more questions on it, and he started to convince me, because I had always been taught by just, secular teachers that, yeah. And they said, beauty is whatever you make of it, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, do whatever you want, doesn't matter. And so he starts challenging that, and then I start getting these ideas in my head, and I start thinking about it, and I start talking to other people, but at that point I knew enough just to know that I don't know anything about the subject, so I would talk to other people about it, and they would bring up objections that I wasn't equipped at that point to answer. So I'd go back to Tom and ask him, thinking I got him. Well, what about this? And then he would say one statement, and then I'd go back to the drawing board, and then I'd get thinking again about something, and then so it ended up that I did my very first paper for that class on beauty, and then I did a bunch of other little papers on the topic, and then ended up giving the lecture, like you said, and then writing my master's thesis on it, and it's probably what I'm going to end up doing my PhD dissertation on at some point in my life. Wow. As well.
This is a topic that we are all going to, myself and the audience, will learn something about today. So, Spiker, let's get right to what is beauty?
It's a, you hit on a very difficult thing to define, because it's been defined so many different ways, and it's really impossible to get a nice, easy statement on it put into effect. A lot of it in our culture, when we think of something that's beautiful, we think of something that has certain emotional qualities, and so there's an aspect of that to it, but there's a lot more to it. For example, the Greek word kalos, which we get the idea of good or beauty from, it had to do with the idea of being well-formed and well-made. It's not just something that you look at and go, oh my gosh, that's great. It also can deal with just structural and functional ideas. So, and then Thomas Aquinas came along and added to that.
Who's Thomas Aquinas? You may want to give us a little background on
him. He was one of the leading Catholic philosophers and theologians of the 13th century. He came along and defined beauty as that which pleases when seen. And when he uses the term seen there, it's the idea of being contemplated. Like, it's not just you happen to glance over and see something. It's, thinking about it and mulling it over. And then Mortimer Adler kind of came up with two aspects of beauty. One, admirable, which is
Mortimer Adler?
Yeah, Mortimer Adler.
Now, who's he?
He, He was an author in predominantly in the 1950s and 60s in this country, and he kind of came up with two, especially in his book Six Great Ideas, he came up with two aspects of beauty, the admirable and the enjoyable. The admirable is the more objective qualities of the thing itself, and the enjoyable is more your personal response to the object. So something that is admirable should be enjoyable, but not necessarily the other way around. Something that's enjoyable may not necessarily be admirable. And that's kind of how he broke it down.
So why is the understanding of beauty important? Why should I care? What about the single mother who's, you know, rushing to get the kids out to school and make breakfast and dinner? Why does she care? Why should she care about what beauty is or any of this type of stuff?
It's kind of funny because when I started dealing with this subject, a lot of my fellow students and everything were asking me the same question that they would have never even thought this was even an important topic at all. Until I started presenting it to them and they started realizing it. Really, there's three main reasons, I think, at least the basic essence of it. The first one is theologically, if one of the attributes of God is beauty, if God is beautiful, then understanding beauty helps
you. You're saying that an attribute of God is beauty is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you defend that?
Mostly.
Okay. All right.
For the sake of where we're at right now, we'll assume that God is beautiful.
Okay. All right,
we'll get to that later on. But so understanding beauty helps you to understand more fully an aspect of God.
Right.
And then philosophically. I like to just say that it's because I think it's true. So therefore, if the idea that beauty is not in the eye of the beholder is a true statement, then it's important to defend it because beauty being just a relative idea would lend itself to making morality and truth up to the eye of the beholder as well. So I think it's an important topic to defend because if we lose ground on this topic, then other topics diminish as well. And then apologetically, in talking with various professors and other people in the field, they think that one of the next big apologetic movements is going to come from the art world. And I think one of the key aspects of that would be the nature of beauty itself.
Well, what is the view of beauty in the art world?
That it's up to you to decide what it is. Anything I do as an artist is beautiful if I say it is. And that's really what it boils down to. And usually, in order to defend that, most art museums and galleries, they'll have their artwork up there, and most people. A lot of modern art becomes very confusing for people. How did this get hung here when it's just a bunch of paint splattered on a canvas? Then, in order to defend that, they usually have on the side of their near their nameplate or whatever. They usually have some kind of justification for the painting or sculpture, or whatever kind of art they happen to be doing.
Well, one of the things that you did touch on, we were talking about beauty as an attribute of God, and I wanted to add is that anything that's an attribute of God is important to learn.
Yeah.
Because it tells us more about God.
Yeah.
And if we are lovers of God, we would want to know more about Him. So then, because we all know that, well, I hope we all know, Christians know that God is omniscient, God is, you know, omnipotent, but we don't always know. We never even thought about the fact that God is also beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just an important attribute as His omniscience. So now let's go back to the standard, the beauty. Now, is there a standard for beauty?
Yeah.
If there's a standard for beauty, then what is that standard?
It obviously, like you basically just said, if beauty is not in the eye of the beholder, then there has to be some standard outside of our own minds. And I think first and foremost, the main standard of beauty is reality itself. And that may seem weird to some people. That gets into a whole realm of philosophy that we probably don't have time to deal with now anyway, but if reality is the standard and then ultimate reality is God, then really it really essentially boils down to that God is the ultimate standard of beauty. Now that's the more theological Christian pat answer, but the followers and of the philosophy of Thomas Aquinas have kind of come up with four main standards of beauty that I've come across within my reading. The first one is actuality, and this deals with three aspects: existence, form, and action. Existence is kind of self-explanatory. Because everything was created by God and exists because of God himself, everything has been given at least a degree of beauty. And the idea of form is what makes one thing, like a flower, have its own beauty versus a newborn baby. Each have their own standard of beauty based on their proper form. And then action deals with the idea that a dancer, for example, is still a dancer when she's sleeping, but she is more of a dancer when she is actually in the act of dancing.
Elaborate on that a little bit more. I'm not sure I got that.
Trying to think of how to explain that. The dancer is a dancer no matter what.
Right.
But when he or she is actually in the process of dancing, they're more of a dancer at that moment because they're actually doing their art.
Okay. All right.
And then another big standard of beauty is radiance. And that's the quality or aspect of the thing that makes the individual, the onlooker, want to perceive that thing again. Whatever that quality is, it's the quality that makes the object enjoyable, really. And then proportion. I have a quote for that by Armand Maurer. It says, "We have only to think of the symmetry of the petals of an orchid, the balance of a mathematical equation, the mutual adaptation of the parts of a work of art to realize how important the factor of harmony or proportion is in beauty." Things that tend to balance each other out, even in painting, a lot of times when we think of proportion or symmetry, we think of two exact replicas on either side.
Right,
it's like the same thing.
Right.
But even in painting, we were always instructed, unless there was a reason to do otherwise, if you have some area of focus in this bottom right corner, you need to have some area of focus up in the top left corner to create that harmony and balance in your painting. And that just makes things more aesthetically pleasing to the eye when you're looking at it, and a song has to resolve on certain notes in order for it to be more pleasing than other songs. And the last one is wholeness, which this one is a little bit more difficult to explain, but it's basically that the thing is perfect in its being and its action. So if a thing is, the being is that it's not lacking anything essential to its nature, and the action could really simply be explained that if it doesn't work, it's not well made. Therefore, it's lacking something that would make it more beautiful.
Okay, let's put this in terms that I can understand. What makes something beautiful? I know you went through all of these different, things that you just went through, but bottom line, if I'm coming to you, I don't have a philosophical background, I don't know about Adler, I don't know about all these people, and I say to you, what makes something beautiful? What would you say?
Really, unity, the unity of especially in terms of artwork, and unity, proportion, and Those are two of the main ones. Radiance, a way I can explain that one a little bit better might be the fact that if there are certain people that radiate, their personality radiates, and everyone wants to be around them. And so to take that over into the art world, there'd be, you know, if there's certain paintings or certain sculptures that everyone really surrounds, then that sculpture could be said to radiate.
Now, what if a person, I know I'm going to throw you a curveball here, but what if a person has this radiant personality, but they're ugly? Then would you say that the person no longer is ugly because of the radiant?
Well,
personality thing?
Well, in terms of people, it makes it difficult because if you separate the emotional aspect of beauty from the idea of just being well formed, you get into the idea that a person, just in terms of the theory behind it, missing an arm is said to be that less beautiful because they're missing something that's proper to what it means to be human. Humans have two arms. And so just on terms of that, but that's just in terms of the physical aspect. But they obviously can still be a beautiful person in every other way. And that's why it gets kind of complicated, because people always associate the term beauty with this emotional idea. But I think beauty is, for human beings, is a lot more than just the physical or just the personality or just the spiritual or the mental. It encompasses everything. So therefore, a person can still be said to be beautiful even if they are lacking something physically that they're supposed to have as a human being. But in terms of just the physical, they are still lacking that thing.
Well, this is something you touched on, you mentioned earlier, and this is, of course, the question that everyone wants to ask is, isn't beauty in the eye of the beholder?
No.
Now, you're going against all conventional wisdom here, because all my life growing up, and I'm sure all your life you've been growing up, we've all been told that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And now you're going to say that it's not?
Nope. Here's where it gets a little confusing. Almost the majority of all philosophers and thinkers up until things started declining in philosophy with guys like Rene Descartes and Immanuel Kant, it was believed that there was at least some kind of objective basis for beauty. So I think this has come in because there's been a confusion of terms. People have lumped the category of beauty and the category of taste into the same thing. Beauty, I think, is not in the eye of the beholder, but taste is in the eye of the beholder. Something can be beautiful and you don't have to like it, whereas something could be ugly and you can still like it.
Okay.
And I think that's really where it boils down to, is a confusion of terms, and it's become a vague category, and I think that's where I come along and kind of separate the two.
So you're saying beauty is, okay, that's the problem. You're saying that when I say that I like that, or I like the way that this woman looks, you're saying that my taste is different than whether or not she's beautiful.
Yeah, that's two separate things. There could be, for example, there could be a fabulous singer.
Right.
That has skill beyond anyone can imagine, but that doesn't mean you have to go out and buy her CDs. But you can't say that she doesn't know how to sing, because she can sing on pitch, she can sing in the right key, she can do all kinds of things, has a huge vocal range, but you just may not like the style of music very much, so your taste says, I don't really want to invest the money in the CD, but the beauty of it is that she has the technical skill to sing.
And this is what I find confusing, because if I see a beautiful woman, then naturally, shouldn't I acknowledge that she's beautiful, and because she's beautiful, won't my taste say that, okay, I desire her because she's beautiful? I mean, because what you're saying seems to imply that she may be beautiful, but I may not have a desire for that beauty.
Yeah, well, when it comes to human relationships too, there's a whole other areas of factors, because sometimes, I mean, there's a psychological and emotional factor in there that you just can't control. Because someone that may not physically be as attractive as a supermodel or someone may have just the type of personality that radiates and therefore she becomes more attractive and appealing because of that. So it, that kind of gets into a whole other topic almost because of the emotional and psychological aspects of that. But at the same time, beauty and taste are definitely separated. Now, that's kind of where it gets into Mortimer Adler's distinction that I mentioned earlier about the admirable and enjoyable. Something that is enjoyable doesn't have to be admirable, but something that is admirable ought to be enjoyable. That still doesn't mean it will be, because people do have different tastes, and we also get into the idea that there is an aspect of beauty that's based on knowledge. For example, if I were the judge of a dog show, I don't know anything about what it means for a dog to be good as right. far as structurally. Right. I would probably pick the one that's cute and fun. Right. But an expert who has studied this stuff can make an educated decision on which dog should win the show, which it can notice blemishes that I, as with untrained eyes, can't see.
Let me see if I understand this now. You're saying that beauty is in a thing objectively. Something possesses beauty whether I recognize it or not. Mm-hmm. But you're also saying that sometimes we have to be trained to recognize beauty. And you're saying that this beauty can be defined by its unity, its symmetry, and a couple of other things. Mm-hmm. But that beauty is separate from what I think of the beauty. That beauty is separate from my taste of that beauty. Mm-hmm. That beauty is objective and live in the thing in and of itself. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, I think I got
See,
it.
You get it.
I think I got it. Okay, I think I got it. But then why is this view so important, or not so important, but so popular that beauty is in the eye of the beholder?
Well, like I said before, it's kind of slipped in there because they lumped these two things together, beauty and taste. And so now people just, it's what I really refer to as an unquestioned assumption. People just assume this is true because it's been said all their lives.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I assumed it was true until I met face to face with Dr. Howe and realized I didn't know anything about it.
right.
But so that, because it's an unquestioned assumption and people just have heard it and it seems to make sense at first glance, and then because of the confusion and vagueness of terms, it just seems to make sense that it's true. But when you really begin to analyze it, I had to be convinced of it. It wasn't just a one-time thing. Someone said, oh, you know, it's not in the eye of the beholder. Okay, I'll accept it. I really fought it for a while.
Right.
I tried to fit any way I could in there, but it's just, you know, I just became convinced of it otherwise.
What's the relationship between art and beauty?
Well, I think that, as an artist, I know that I was always trained to do whatever I feel like doing, but now I'm becoming more convinced, and I don't have, you know, full answer of this, still working on it, but now I've become more convinced that the goal of artwork is to create an aesthetic experience of the beautiful.
Explain what you mean by aesthetic experience.
Well, the aesthetic experience just simply means the experience of beauty. For the sake of what we're talking about, it just means the experience of beauty. So I think that is what the goal of artwork ought to be. And I think we've, in our culture, have lessened the excellence of art for the sake of our soapboxes, really. We have this idea that we want to try and depict in our artwork. Therefore, we do artwork that isn't really of the same quality as other types just for the sake of trying to get our ideas across, basically.
Is some artwork more beautiful than other artwork?
I would say yes. However, a lot of people would assume in that statement that Da Vinci's Mona Lisa is much more impressive than Jackson Pollock's splatter painting. But when you get into things like that, you have to understand that you have to take each type of artwork in its own genre and rate it on that scale. You can't compare abstract modern art with the Mona Lisa. It doesn't make any sense. You have to compare the Mona Lisa with other things in that same genre and then compare abstract art in its own category.
So going back to what you were saying, hopefully I picked up on this. All paintings have beauty in them. But I, with an untrained eye, may not be able to see beauty in certain paintings. I may find a painting that I like that's really not as beautiful as a lot of other paintings, but I like it because of its, because of my taste, not necessarily because it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, because again, like I said, it's an emotional experience. There may be a particular painting that you see in a museum that maybe other people don't really find it as attractive, but maybe there's something from your past, like it reminds you of your dad or something, you know, and so that's why you prefer it, and that's why all this stuff gets into really some very vague areas, and it's hard to nail down an exact definition and other things like that.
We touched on this question before also, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more now. What's the relationship between God and beauty?
I think the main relationship is that God is the creator, and God is the ultimate source of beauty and truth and morality and goodness and et cetera, all down the line. Therefore, God has put within creation His beauty, and every experience of beauty is an experience of God.
Are you saying that there's beauty in everything?
To a degree.
So some things have more beauty than others.
Yeah.
So there's beauty in garbage.
In a sense.
There's just less beauty than in a rose.
Yes.
Okay. I buy that. Thanks, Mike. I think you've cleared it up for me because I was confused about this, and I'm sure a lot of my guests were also confused about this.
Well, hopefully, so, I cleared it up.
Yeah. So thank Michael Spiker for coming on the show, talking about beauty. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. Be sure to join me again next time. And until then, goodbye and God bless. Yeah.